It's Wednesday, May 1st. These states were already politically charged. Well, wait until the end of the day. We start here. Florida prepares for a near total ban on abortion, while Arizona considers stepping beyond the 1800s.
There's one person responsible for this nightmare, and he's acknowledged and he brags about it, Donald Trump.
On a monumental day, how residents and presidential candidates are reacting. Marjorie Taylor Greene wanted to get the House Speaker fired. She failed.
She is a legislative arsonist, and she is holding the gas tank.
Why Democrats made the decision to swoop in and save him. And going ganja.
It'll actually be a historic shift at the federal level and the agency's biggest policy change in over 50 years.
Why federal marijuana laws could be changing. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. We told you that former President Donald Trump might be on the wrong side of the law in his hush money trial, that regardless of what the jury finds, he could be found in contempt of court for violating a gag order by making misleading posts about his case. Yesterday, a judge made good on that promise. He ordered Trump pay a $9,000 fine and threatened potential jail time if Trump doesn't abide by the rules of the courtroom. And yet, these might not be the public comments that most impact Trump's election chances.
Donald Trump is under fire from all sides on abortion rights. Former president now said the issue should be for the states to decide.
Abortion is clearly on the ballot this year. In some states, the right to an abortion is literally on the ballot. And in recent interviews, Trump has been unclear about whether any state abortion law would go too far in his eyes.
The states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both. And whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state.
Well, today in Florida, all of this politicking is about to be put to the test because a ban on virtually all abortions in Florida is about to go into effect. This is demanding answers of both the former and current presidents, of course. So let's bring in ABC's chief White House correspondent, Mary Bruce. She is at the West Wing right now. Mary, first off, Florida, what is about to happen there today?
Well, starting today, that six-week ban on abortions goes into effect in this critical state, with exceptions, of course, for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. But it has made Florida such a critical testing ground, both politically and for abortion rights in this country. And Brad, it really goes beyond just Florida because, of course, the state has really become a major access point for abortions across the Southeast. So this has an impact not just on women in Florida, but thousands of women who have been traveling to the state to also receive abortions and abortion care.
Well, and both campaigns really hitting the trail in different parts of the country today. I mean, what are they saying about this?
Look, Florida is now one of 13 states where abortion could be on the ballot this November. Both races know just how critical this issue is going to be, especially in these key battleground states. And the Biden-Harris campaign is certainly aware that every time abortion has been on the ballot since Roe was overturned, even in red states, abortion rights have won.
I do think that having abortion on the ballot is a huge incentive to young voters. And I think we've seen in the past that when young voters do get passionate and do get riled up, they do have the ability to sway elections.
It is part of the reason why Kamala Harris is going to be down in Florida today, hammering home their message on this and directly taking the fight to Donald Trump. We've seen in recent weeks both Kamala Harris, who's really leading the charge on this for their campaign, but also President Biden really arguing that Donald Trump is to blame for all of these restrictions and bans that are now taking effect across the country.
Let's be real clear. There's one person responsible for this nightmare, and he's acknowledged and he brags about it, Donald Trump.
They say he owns this because he appointed three of the Supreme Court justices who overturned Roe versus Wade, a point that Donald Trump still brags about.
I was proudly the person responsible for the ending of something that all legal scholars, both sides, wanted and in fact demanded be ended, Roe v. Wade.
And we have heard Donald Trump repeatedly say, look, this is an issue that's up to the states. And he has said recently that he thinks they are handling it brilliantly. But he's now going even further. In an interview with Time magazine that came out yesterday, Donald Trump says he won't stand in the way if states want to monitor pregnant women to make sure they comply with abortion bans. And he says he won't step in to prevent states from prosecuting women who violate those bans by ending their pregnancies.
Wait, I just want to be clear about what we're talking here. This is like a hypothetical law in which You would have pregnant women be monitored so that the state government could go back and be like, you had the baby, right? Like, you didn't have an abortion, or they have to prove to us that you had a miscarriage if that's what was happening. Like, is that what we're talking about?
Donald Trump was asked directly if he thinks states should monitor women's pregnancies so they can know if they've gotten an abortion after the ban. And Trump told Time, and I quote, I think they might do that. Again, he said, you'll have to speak to the individual states.
Huh. Okay, so there's the Florida ban taking effect today. That's not the only state where things are happening, by the way. Arizona, lawmakers in the state Senate are expected to perhaps pass a repeal of that 1864 law that suddenly became state law in the absence of Roe v. Wade. How are political leaders thinking about this? Because these are swing states when you got these huge upheavals in an election year.
Well, while we now have more than 20 states that have enacted new laws and restrictions and bans since the overturning of Roe versus Wade, you have also now seen how this issue can motivate voters.
You know, we have a 60% threshold here in Florida to get an amendment passed. I think we are going to easily clear that because of the youth turnout, but I think we're going to see a lot of Republican crossover because I think they're tired of their own party with this issue.
And that is something that especially the Biden-Harris campaign is banking on, right? They are hoping that if they can really continue to make this issue a central focus in this campaign, that it will drive voters to the polls in November in a way that they feel will benefit Democrats going forward.
I am concerned about women's reproductive rights. I don't see how you can be pro-life and not be concerned about what's happening to women.
And you continue to see Donald Trump also well aware. While he is bragging and boasting of the steps that he took to overturn Roe, he is also trying to distance himself in some ways by saying, look, this is up to the states, trying to distance himself from any kind of national ban. Mm. That's an argument that the Biden-Harris team clearly disagrees with. As President Biden tweeted out yesterday, quote, Donald Trump doesn't trust women, saying, I do.
All right. Mary Bruce there at the White House. We'll continue to see how these appearances go today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
So you remember how House Speaker Mike Johnson has been on thin ice in his own party recently?
I have to do my job. We have to do what we believe to be the right thing.
Specifically, there are lots of Republicans uncomfortable with the amount of foreign aid he's been doling out and using Democratic support to push through his proposals.
Mike Johnson is a lame duck.
Are you ever going to bring him? He's done.
A couple Republicans, including Marjorie Taylor Greene, have suggested holding a vote to take the gavel out of his hands. Well, yesterday, in a fascinating piece of political theater, Greene started to push ahead with this plan while lawmakers came to Johnson's defense, saying they won't let it happen. The unusual thing here is those lawmakers that made the difference were Democrats. Let's go to ABC senior congressional correspondent Rachel Scott. She's at the Capitol right now. Rachel, it's been this kind of like will she or won't she vibe right now. What was the plan from Congresswoman Greene here?
Yeah, Brad. And honestly, we've been asking ourselves that question for 40 days. She has been dangling out this threat in front of Speaker Johnson's face now for weeks. And look, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is very upset at Speaker Johnson.
He did this bullshit in here on the House floor, foreign war package that does nothing for America.
She's mad that he worked with Democrats to fund the government. She's upset that he worked with Democrats to pass much needed aid to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan.
Mike Johnson is literally betraying the American people in order to keep his grip of power on the speakership.
She called all of this a betrayal, and so she says that Johnson should step down, that he should resign, and that if he doesn't, she's going to force a vote to oust him. And remember, any single lawmaker could force a vote to try to remove the Speaker of the House.
Right.
Johnson does have this razor-thin majority. He can only afford to lose two Republicans if all the Democrats are united against him. Three Republicans say they want him gone. And so yesterday, Brad, the House comes back into session.
How soon do you plan to make a decision?
Why go against your own party, Congresswoman?
There is this thought. Is she going to finally bring this forward? You have a lot of Republicans that just say, do it already.
I'm headed back to my office.
And then that put all eyes on Democrats. And many were asking, what are Democrats going to do? And are they going to try and save Speaker Johnson's job?
She is a legislative arsonist, and she is holding the gas tank.
Democrats came out, and they said that they would save the Republican Speaker of the House. This is a striking move. Typically, you have Democrats support a Democratic Speaker of the House. You have Republicans support a Republican Speaker of the House. But all of a sudden, you had Democrats banding together with the majority of Republicans saying that they do not want to send the House into chaos again.
Let's turn the page. Let's focus on the issues that the American people care about. There's an FAA bill that was dropped. There's important work that we still have ahead.
Look, Brad, we all remember those weeks where we did not have a Speaker of the House, where the House was paralyzed. They couldn't move forward on any legislation. No one wants to see that happen except for these far-right fringe members of the Republican conference. And so you have a number of Democrats that came forward and said that they want to turn the page.
It's possible that this could happen again with respect to this motion that she could bring up. We want to turn the page and we want to move on.
And they do not want to let, in their words, these fringe Republicans like Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene dictate the schedule.
But wait, I'm so confused, Rachel, because I'm just thinking, like, from a Democratic lawmaker's point of view, wouldn't you love to just pull out the popcorn and watch the Republican Party eat itself alive on the House floor? Like, what is the upside to keeping and legitimizing this Republican speaker?
Yeah, and that's exactly what they did when Speaker McCarthy was ousted. You remember, Democrats had that popcorn. Right. They were sitting in the chamber. They were watching that chaos unfold. And they said to Republicans, look, you created this. You fix it. Well, this time is a little different here because Speaker Johnson really pulled off something that a lot of Democrats didn't think that he could really do, and that was get that much-needed aid to Ukraine passed. Johnson knew that the majority of Republicans did not support that in his Republican conference. And Brad, look, in a lot of ways, I've talked to sources within the Democratic Party, and they say, trust the devil you know. And by that, it means trust the speaker that at least you know. And so if he's showing that he's willing to reach across the aisle, that he's willing to move forward in a bipartisan way on these key issues, well, they might as well work with him because they have no idea who they're going to get next.
So where does that leave Speaker Johnson? And where does that leave Marjorie Taylor Greene? Like you said, she's been kind of dangling this as, like, everyone has said, like, her wing of the party's got a lot of power. Is there no power there now?
Yeah, well, there really isn't quite a lot. And a lot of Republicans even are just flat out frustrated with her.
Well, I don't think there's much, if any, support for a motion to vacate this time.
She can pull it. I mean, that's her right. But I'm not going to support it.
I think there needs to be a higher standard for any such vacate of the chair.
We asked Republicans one by one whether or not they support Greene's efforts, and the majority of them told us that they don't.
What do you make of all this?
Look, it's a sideshow, and it's not actually accomplishing anything.
So many of them told us that they were frustrated by this. They called it all a sideshow.
She would need Democrats to remove Mike Johnson. So it's a bunch of nonsense, frankly, what she's talking about.
And we are 6 months out from an election, and a lot of Republicans up here say this is not the type of message that they want to be sending to voters, that the Republican Party has all this infighting and they can't come together, they can't choose a speaker, they can't settle on anything.
I've got to do my job and continue to keep my head down. This is a very serious time for the country. We're not playing games here. The world is on fire.
As for Johnson, look, he says he did not cut a deal with Democrats to keep his job.
The Speaker of the House serves the whole body. I am a conservative Republican, a lifelong conservative Republican. That's what my philosophy is. That's what my record is. And we'll continue to govern on those principles.
And he's calling this all a distraction. He is not going to step down or resign. And really, he's standing by his actions. He says that he did the right thing. He has a job to do. And right now, that's on keeping a functioning Congress.
Yeah, because you usually think during an election year, nothing gets done. I mean, things have been happening in Congress. And you also wonder if maybe Washington in disarray, that kind of headline, also then boomerangs back and reflects on the president in people's minds as they go to the polls. Rachel Scott, there at the Capitol, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, Last Dance for Mary Jane as a Schedule I narcotic, the DOJ's high hopes after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Whenever we do stories about marijuana being legal in such and such a state, you gotta remember it is still federally illegal. It is a Schedule I narcotic, according to the Drug Enforcement Agency. The only reason you're not hearing stories about the feds shutting down all these new dispensaries and people openly smoking weed in public is the DEA has decided not to do that. There's been a years-long push to legalize pot, or at least reclassify it as something further down the list of harmful drugs. Well, yesterday, we learned that's exactly what the Department of Justice plans on doing. Let's go to ABC's Justin Gomez, who covers the Biden administration. Justin, what are you hearing?
So, Brad, sources are telling us over here that the DEA is recommending classifying marijuana as a less dangerous drug, moving it from a Schedule I classification alongside other drugs, very dangerous drugs like heroin and LSD, to a less severe Schedule III drug, which puts it alongside ketamine, anabolic steroids, and testosterone. Now, those Schedule I drugs are considered to have a high risk of abuse with no recognized medical use in the U.S., while the Schedule V drugs at the lower end of the scale have a lower potential for abuse. And this is all stemming from a directive that President Biden gave in October 2022. He asked the Health and Human Services Secretary and the Attorney General to begin reviewing how marijuana is scheduled under federal law. At that time, he said it made no sense for marijuana to be on the same level as something like heroin.
Wait, okay, so there's 1 through 5. So this would land it right in the middle then, like Schedule 3. What would that mean? Like, what's the actual impact of that if that happens?
So, Brad, it'll actually be a historic shift at the federal level and the agency's biggest policy change in over 50 years. Now, we know that 38 states have legalized medical marijuana and 24 states have legalized its recreational use, but federal policy has been behind in this area. Cannabis is a multi-billion dollar industry, and easing these federal regulations could reduce the tax burden for a majority of those businesses. It would also still be regulated by the DEA, and dispensaries would have to register with the agency just like a regular pharmacy. But it could also make it easier to conduct clinical studies on marijuana, which has been difficult to do as a Schedule I drug.
That's interesting what you said about the dispensaries, because you're right. Like, for the last several years, they've basically had to act like these dispensaries don't exist, because federally, they're completely illegal, but they don't want to prosecute them, so they just had to be like, I hope the states regulate them. Now you can imagine the federal government being even like more involved. What happens next for this potential policy then? Because the DEA hasn't signed off yet.
Not yet. This is still far from a done deal. And even if approved, it's important to know that it does not legalize marijuana outright. It would still be a Class 3 substance. So stick with me for a little bit here. Once the Department of Justice sends their recommendation to the White House's Office of Management and Budget, they will open it up to a public comment period. Once that is complete, it will then be sent back to DOJ, which will run its own process and review those comments. There will also be hearings by an administrative law judge. Now, it's a lengthy process. Don't expect implementation of this rule to happen anytime soon if the rule does become finalized.
So that's helpful guidance and like expectation setting. I'm also just wondering, Justin, like, are there any reasons not to do this, either from a public health perspective or a law enforcement perspective? Like, this has been in place so many years. I'm just trying to figure out why it hasn't changed. Is that just inertia, or are there real reasons to not go ahead with this?
So from a medical standpoint, Brad, physicians don't think marijuana belongs in the same list as the more dangerous drugs like heroin, but continue to have concerns about its widespread use. Some critics also say that they still see this as a gateway drug, but it's a move that would widely be welcomed by the administration. The president has already pardoned thousands of people convicted of simple marijuana possession at the federal level. And of course, we're in an election year. Politics is at the top of mind going towards November, and it fulfills one of the president's 2020 campaign promises ahead of the election. From a political view, it could give him a boost with those younger voters that he needs to secure that win in November.
Right, because the White House is supposed to be theoretically separate from the DOJ, and yet you know the president, who's seen support from younger voters dwindling even just in recent weeks, would love to have kind of a win among those voters. All right, Justin Gomez there at the White House. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brad.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, they couldn't shake her fear of monsters, so they went to Plan B. One Last Thing is next.
As in previous campaigns, it's the economy, stupid. We'll be looking at that this morning.
First, though, it's the news, stupid.
It is the economy, stupid.
It's not the economy, stupid.
It's national security, stupid.
It's the hair, stupid.
In 1992, one of the best-known pieces of presidential campaign wisdom was born. It's the economy, stupid. But was it actually the economy that won Bill Clinton that election? In a new series from the 538 Politics podcast, we're taking a look back at conventional wisdom from past elections with a critical lens. Where did that wisdom come from? And does it hold up today? Find the Campaign Throwback series in the 538 Politics feed wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. What do you do when your kid tells you there's a monster in their closet? Do you assure them? Maybe sit with them while they fall asleep? Well, perhaps you should be investigating. This week, Chris and Ashley Klass from Charlotte, North Carolina, told Good Morning America how lately their 3-year-old daughter has been really enjoying the movie Monsters, Inc.
Hey, that looks like Randall. Randall's your monster.
She would say, Mama, Dada, there's monsters in my room, you know, like almost shaking in fear.
They tried to talk her down, but the complaints didn't subside. By the time winter turned into spring, they started to notice something was going on in their century-old farmhouse.
We noticed a couple bees when we were outside playing with the kids when it started to get better weather here in Charlotte.
Eventually, they called in a pest control company. Enter professional beekeeper Curtis Collins.
A beehive creates a lot of heat, so it shows up on a thermal camera really well.
He goes into the house with a heat-seeking camera and doesn't find anything until he tries the bedrooms.
And sure enough, we went into the toddler's room and very quickly got a heat signature on the wall.
Now, when he says he found a beehive, that doesn't quite do it justice. This honeycomb stretched the entire height of the room, floor to ceiling. The wall itself had become a monstrous, vibrating beehive.
Based on the weight of the bees that I removed, I would say I probably removed somewhere between 50 and 60,000 bees.
As of this week, these honeybees are still being removed from their house. The daughter is sleeping in a different room. And Ashley says it's proof that your kid is never too young to be taken seriously, and that if you hear a monster, honey, say something before it becomes an even stickier situation. That'll do it for us today. By the way, our own Rachel Scott, who you heard earlier, she really, really wanted to wish our listeners a happy NSYNC Day. If you know, you know, it's going to be May. I guess it already is. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
It's going to be May.
As in previous campaigns, it's the economy, stupid. We'll be looking at that this morning.
First, though, it's the news, stupid.
It is the economy, stupid.
It's not the economy, stupid.
It's national security, stupid.
It's the hair, stupid.
In 1992, one of the best-known pieces of presidential campaign wisdom was born. It's the economy, stupid. But was it actually the economy that won Bill Clinton that election? In a new series from the 538 Politics podcast, we're taking a look back at conventional wisdom from past elections with a critical lens. Where did that wisdom come from? And does it hold up today? Find the Campaign Throwback series in the 538 Politics feed wherever you get your podcasts.